Welcome to the Natural Super Kids podcast, where you will discover practical strategies to inspire you to boost the health and nutrition of your kids. I'm Jessica Donovan, a qualified naturopath specializing in kids' health, and I want to make it as easy as possible for you to raise healthy and happy kids. Let's get into it. Hey, hey, welcome back to the Natural Super Kids podcast. Jessica Donovan here. Now, today we are diving into the terrifying world of EMFs, electromagnetic fields. And I have Nicole Bielsma back on the podcast to pick her brains about what exactly are EMFs, what impact they're having on our kids' health, and the ways that we can reduce our kids' exposure to EMFs, which can sometimes feel impossible. But I was really reassured by this conversation with Nicole and reminded of some of the simple things that I can do within my home environment and encourage my teenage kids to do in terms of, you know, their habits with their phones and their devices to reduce those electromagnetic fields that can cause havoc with our health. Now, I talked to Nicole in last week's episode as well on the podcast, so make sure you have a listen to that if you haven't already. In that episode, in last week's episode, we dived into chemicals and toxins within the home and how to make your home environment that bit healthier. So Nicole is a building biologist. She really is the healthy home guru here in Australia. She has an amazing book and is the best-selling author of a book called Healthy Home, Healthy Family. I would highly recommend that you get yourself a copy of this book. It really is a great resource and really interesting reading with lots of research to back up, you know, Nicole's findings on making our homes healthier and our kids' environment healthier as well. So Nicole is the CEO of the Australian College of Environmental Studies and has lectured at tertiary institutions for 30 years. She's published peer-reviewed journals and is regularly consulted by the media to discuss mold, electromagnetic fields, which of course is what we're talking about today, and toxic chemicals. Nicole lectures in Australia and abroad about environmental health issues. So she really is a wealth of knowledge when it comes to, you know, EMFs that we're talking about today. Let's dive into the conversation. Hello, welcome back to the podcast, Nicole.
Hi, Jess.
I'm excited to dive into and a little bit nervous to find out what you've got to say about the topic of EMFs. Can you explain to our listeners what EMFs are and how they impact our health and our children's health?
That's a big topic, and very passionate about this as a mother who's tearing her hair out, who, you know, is my research was and is on electromagnetic fields. So that's what they are, electromagnetic fields. Now, since electrification, i.e. electricity in our homes, we have various fields that exist as a result of that, and most of the time they're not problematic. So you have your electricity coming into the house, it then goes to the meter panel, and then it goes through various circuits to various parts of the house, and you plug your appliances in, and then they work. It's beautiful. So the time when that's going to be an issue, those appliances, the only appliances that can tend to create what we call a magnetic field, which is appliances that are put into the power point and create a magnetic field, are those that have that draw a lot of current. So that would be mainly your fridge motor. When the fridge goes off and on during the night, if your bed is on the other side of the wall of the fridge, because magnetic fields go through walls, that's when you can get sleep disturbances. So the first thing I look at as a building biologist is, where is your bed head backing up onto? Is what's on the other side of the wall? Now, the other one is the oven, electric ovens especially. So you don't want cots or any form of bed to be, especially children's bed, on the opposite or the adjacent side of a wall where there's an oven or a fridge, because of the current, which is electrons going through the wiring, can create a magnetic field. So the beauty with adults, if you have a master bedroom against a kitchen wall where there's an oven, not such an issue because you're not going to cook and sleep at the same time. But kids who are sleeping during the day when the oven could be on, whose cots are on the opposite wall to the oven, as in adjacent next to, that can be problematic for their sleeping. So the other one, of course, is the meter panel or the smart meter that generates a magnetic field. So they're the ones that I would look at as a building biologist when I'm assessing your home for EMFs, is not having a bed head backing up against a meter panel or smart meter, a fridge, electric oven, and, of course, the inverter. Inverters are used for solar panels. So they're the big ones that can cause issues. The other one is living within 400 metres of a high-voltage transmission line, those big power lines. Or living within 3 metres of a power line of a street. So that's an issue if you live in inner city areas near a tram line or a second or third story where you can see the power line of the street literally just outside of your second story window. That can be very problematic for magnetic fields. So they're the sort of things that we don't want in terms of exposure. So fortunately, very few people have environments where they're exposed to high magnetic fields. The research on this came out initially in 1979 by Wertheimer and Leeper, that showed living within 400 or 500 metres from high voltage transmission lines within the first 15 years of life doubled the risk of childhood leukemia. So they were the first to show that. And since then, there have been multiple publications or what we call systematic reviews, which is a summary of the evidence to show, yes, that high voltage transmission lines and especially magnetic fields in excess of 3 or 4 milligauss are associated with a doubling the incidence of childhood leukemia. But it's rare. So make sure when you look at your bed and the kids' bedroom that their bed head is not backing up onto those things that I mentioned, and that will reduce your exposure. The second thing with electromagnetic fields is the radiation emitted from your Wi-Fi enabled devices. And this is the nightmare because it's everywhere. And what we know about the radio, whether it's radio frequencies, this is the radiation emitted from all Wi-Fi enabled devices, your cell phones, your iPads, your digital devices that have Wi-Fi connectivity, your cordless mouse, keyboard printers, smart air conditioners, smart watches, your devices that you have on your wrist, you know, your Fitbits, they're all emitting what we call radio frequencies. And the problem with that is that it's in what we call the non-ionizing radiation. So unlike X-rays and nuclear bombs, which are in the ionizing section of the spectrum, it affects the body differently, but it still causes significant adverse health effects. It just takes a long time. So it's like tobacco smoke. Tobacco smoke took 50 years to get legislated because the latency period for smoking and lung cancer is quite significant. Same with asbestos. It took multiple decades before asbestos was acknowledged as being an adverse health effect, because to show cause and effect is difficult, because it's not like being run over by a bus and hurting your leg and going, oh, it was the bus. It takes a long time. Now, the concern is that it's become really clear now in the research that the way radio frequencies impact health is they suppress melatonin. Now, anyone who's got a child on the spectrum or neurodevelopmental disorders is probably on melatonin to help them sleep. Melatonin is one of the most important neuropeptides for sleep, but also for reproductive cycles. When melatonin drops as a child, that's when you enter puberty. That's the key marker, is a drop in melatonin. Melatonin is also the most important anti-cancer neuropeptide we have in the body. It's the powerful free radical scavenger. And when that drops with age, then you age. There's rapid aging. That's when you get chronic disease manifestation. So the interesting thing about what's happened in the last 10 years is, you know, a lot of these kids aren't sleeping and there's more, you know, we're giving melatonin to everybody, which is a good thing, I guess, but the quickest way to suppress it is to have your digital devices in bed, to have them in your bedroom or even in an adjacent room. The devices that emit the highest level of radiation are your extenders, boosters, routers, cordless phones. They're the worst. Many of the routers that we're testing have the same level of radiation as a mobile phone base station. And what seems to have happened in the last 5 years is Telstra has built in multiple antennas in the routers and modems. So when people pass your house, they have the capacity to connect to your modem temporarily to maintain signal instead of the mobile phone base station.
So they've done that deliberately.
Well, I mean, it looks like that certainly saves them license agreements, et cetera, for tens of thousands of dollars a year. But the radiation we're getting from these dual band modems is in the millions. I mean, in the latest guidelines by the International Guideline for Non-Ionizing Radiation by a panel of 30 researchers, they said you should keep it below 100 microwatts. These routers are in the millions. It's hundreds of thousands. I'm not surprised we're in a pandemic of insomnia because we know radio frequencies affect sleep. So it's really important if you must. Personally, I think every house needs to be hardwired. If you've got kids, you need to hardwire the house. Having a modem is not okay because the modems are designed to emit high levels of radiation throughout your house, your neighbor's house, the neighborhood. Like, you can just look at your phone and go, oh, I can see all the modems in my suburb and my street. Why? Because they're bathing everybody. That's the problem. The closer you are to the source, i.e. where the modem, extender, booster, router is, the higher the level of radiation. It drops off quickly with distance. So to me, if you can't hardwire your house, because, you know, it costs me $1,800 to get a electrician to come in and put hardwire Ethernet cable and ports in the kids' bedroom and in the living space. And, of course, that's expensive. But to me, that's really important because if the kids aren't sleeping, then they're moody, they're irritable, and it has a downstream effect for their health and their academic performance. So to me, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah, let alone the long-term effects we don't really know about yet, right?
Well, because it's your most important anti-cancer hormone, it's accelerating your capacity to deal with cancers accelerate. And, of course, we now know brain tumours are associated with cell phone use. It just takes 10 years or more. The latency period for brain tumours is 15 to 25 years. So the argument that the cell phones don't cause cancer, they could not even make that call until recently because it takes like asbestos, like these other, long-term environmental tobacco smoke, it takes years. Asbestos was 37 years before from exposure to development of the cancer. With cell phones, it takes years. So, but the reality is it's right at our doorstep now because since 3G was enforced or introduced in the telecommunications network from around early 2000, now, 23 years or up to 25 years coming up now, this is when we start to see the tsunami of brain tumours, and we are seeing this in the data. Over the age of 60, the data in Australia has almost doubled for over 60-year-olds for brain tumours, and they're saying they don't know why. I have two of my best friends diagnosed with brain tumours 2 months apart this year. One has grade 4, 6 months she's been given. She's 59. The other one's 50. Now, it's really important to keep, and it may be due to that. Who knows for sure?
We can't say, right. But
the fact that we're seeing people below 60 developing these brain tumours and the oncologist, the neurologist saying, I don't know what's going on. We're seeing so many young people in their 20s and their 30s with these types of brain tumours. And that's what they said to these two women. We don't know why. And I said, well, the latency period is up. We've been seeing this for 15 to 25 years. We're going to see the tsunami. And unfortunately, it looks like, in my personal life, I know two women with it. What's the chances of that for a rare brain tumour like glioma?
Not all that rare anymore. And I personally, not in my close circle, but I know of in my community, a couple of people that have passed away, well under 60 of brain tumours over the last couple of years. So it's really scary. And also, the amount of time we're spending on these devices now, even compared to 5 years ago, has, you know, that's what also really scares me as well, because it's, yeah, only going to get worse, really, isn't it?
It is. And look, it's very hard as a parent. Like, I'm a single mum and I spend a lot of time yelling at my kids, get off the bloody device. I have rules like, okay, if you're going to use the device, then the only rule I have is I'm going to have my meter next to you on full volume going, oh, mum, get that device away from me. I can't hear. I go, yes, that's what your body's dealing with. So the meter's picking up this massive sound from the radiation emitted that we can't hear with our ears, but your body is absorbing that. So it's really important, you know, to try and download the app and then go into wife, you know, to get off into flight mode, to make sure the big devices, as I said, routers, extenders, boosters, cordless phones, if you can't go hardwired, then at least power down the router and the modem by 90%. So when you buy it, it's powered to its highest setting. So it's emitting radiation all over your house and your backyard and the neighbours. You can power that down, and I talk about that in the book, look at the number under the router, go into the setting and then reduce it. Mm. So it's only bathing one or two rooms in your house where you want Wi-Fi connectivity as opposed to your sleeping areas. Having the phone and any Wi-Fi enabled device in your bedroom is a no-go. You need to sleep. If you don't get sleep right, and this is the issue with a lot of the kids, that if you don't get the sleep right, they never get better. Their mental health, every mental illness you can think of has sleep disturbances as part of its presentation, every one of them. Because if you don't sleep, that's why they use in war sleep deprivation, because you will go nuts. And, of course, you accelerate aging and cancer risk because melatonin is critical for that. So you've got to get your sleeping environment right, and you do that by getting rid of every Wi-Fi-enabled device, not having your cell phones in your room while you're sleeping, having a battery-operated clock as your alarm would be better, and not having anything on the other side of your bedhead that is Wi-Fi-enabled or draws that current.
Yes, I love it. And what about airplane mode? Like, in terms of like phones, I know you mentioned that, but say phones in the bedroom but on airplane mode, is that good or is it better out of the like?
I think you're better off charging your phones in a room a couple of rooms away. Yeah. Personally, I think it's because even in airplane mode, you can still have Wi-Fi connectivity, like see Bluetooth, you can see Wi-Fi, and that may or may not be on still. You know, so I think you're best to have your devices out of the bedroom and then having a battery-operated clock instead.
Okay, I'm bringing this up with my teenagers again because I have a no phone in our bedroom rule, like for me and my husband, like we're both on board with that. But somehow my kids have talked me into the fact that I think it was like to listen to their go-to-sleep music or whatever. they've been putting them on airplane mode, but yeah, I think we need to go that step and get them out of the bedrooms.
Yeah, look, absolutely, it's important, and it's not easy. I really sympathise for every mother and parent out there because I have challenges with that. I am still yelling, and I, you know, did a randomised controlled trial on the impact of a baby monitor on healthy adult sleep, and it was statistically significant. It affected healthy adults. I couldn't get ethics approval to put this baby monitor on a cot and test the babies. I bought it from Kmart and I couldn't get ethics approval, but I could put it near healthy adults. Finding healthy adults at sleep, it was a challenge. I got 12 adults in my study. It was a four-week study, and second and fourth week were I put a baby monitor next to their bedhead, and then on one of the weeks, because it was double blind, on one of the weeks it wasn't on. I didn't know, they didn't know. On the other week it was on. And it affected their non-REM sleep. It affected 30% of them had clinical insomnia after 7 nights of having this monitor next to their head. Oh, and this monitor was designed to be used like that.
So what's the deal with baby monitors? Is it the EMFs as well?
Massive radiation, massive. It's actually because the radiation emitted from it, I chose that as the unit because the radio frequencies from that are huge, similar to a router. Mm-hmm. And, of course, what I see at the ground level is that when we're doing audits, you know, assessing homes where there's kids with cots, with baby monitors, they're not sleeping. They're very restless. They end up at the mother-baby unit in the hospital. No one's asking questions about EMFs. So I said to my supervisor, I want to do a study on this because I'm seeing a lot of sleep deprivation in young kids because of the baby monitor. And the study that I've done and written up has been rejected by 8 journals who keep my study for 6 months, knowing I cannot give it to another journal, and then reject it for the most ridiculous reasons. And the 3 professors are going, Cole, it's too controversial. No one wants to touch it. The journals, some of these are funded by telecommunications.
Oh my gosh.
So what you see, what you see is evidence-based, and what's really going on out there is very different.
Yeah, wow. So for parents listening that might be using a baby monitor, any better alternatives or just?
Yes. So definitely a hardwired monitor is better, not one that's Wi-Fi enabled. If you must listen or see your children when they're sleeping. I mean, to me, with twins, it was like, I just got to shut that door after they dress them and feed them. Guys, I need an hour of sleep between feeds. I'm going to go nuts. Is a CC, hardwired CCTV is a better option, much better. I'll talk about that in the book again. So hardwired option. If you've got a child at risk of SIDS, you need some form of monitoring. I get that. But I think half the time, it's really important. You've got to put your health there as well as the kids. If you're not getting sleep as a parent, you're no good to anybody. There has to be something where, you know, I've seen parents that are so hypervigilant, they're walking zombies and put their kid first, when in fact they need to put their health first as well.
Yes.
It's a compromise. I don't know, you know, this vigilance of having to listen to your kid breathe. I don't know, there's something in that. I can't do that.
No, I was never a baby monitor user either. But like we used to live in a very small house when the kids were little, so that I helps. Could hear them pretty easily. So like for us with teenagers, I know you've got teenagers as well. I've got teenagers, and you know, I mean, kids are getting mobile phones younger and younger these days. Like, what are the sort of, I don't know, like realistic restrictions? I mean, I put sort of time limits on my kids' phones, which they absolutely hate. But you know, it just switches off, and it's 2 hours a day, which I still think is way too long. Like what would be your kind of, I guess, tips, like in a practical sense, in the modern world, to minimize the impacts of EMS, specifically from mobile phones, for our kids?
Well, the good news with this generation, the bad news is this generation's addicted. You know, we've got digital dementia. There's new words in our vocabulary: Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, digital dementia, nomophobia, fear of being without a phone.
Yes.
The bad news about the generation is they text. They don't tend to call on their phone a lot. So that's brilliant. Texting is great because it keeps it away from a vital organ. You do want to keep it away from your brain, your heart, and your testes and your
reproductive. Okay, well, that is good news.
Yes. So if you do that, you can reduce the exposure by 80 or 90%. So that's really good. Don't carry it in your bra or in your waist near your reproductive organs. That's really important. So that's those things alone are very, very helpful in reducing the radiation. And, of course, not in your bedroom whilst you're sleeping at night. So I forgot to mention, if you've got a router or you're renting and you've got a Wi-Fi booster router, turn it off at night before you go to bed. And I recommend my clients to get a clock timer. So, you know, when you go on holidays, you can turn the lights on and off automatically with a clock timer. Get one attached to your router so it automatically turns off at a certain time of the night. So you don't even have to think about it. And the little buggers who get onto their phone at night while you're sleeping can't get onto the internet because, if you know, the router's not.
Yes, perfect.
So I would recommend clients do that.
That's a really good reminder. Actually, I used to turn ours off every night, and I've just fallen out of the habit of that. Ooh. So thank you for that reminder. We do have not the whole house, but we do have you know, some of the house kind of, what did you call it, hardwired with the but I think I need to get on to putting that through the whole house as well. Okay, so for anyone interested, you know, more in these kinds of topics, you know, I know you're the guru of environmental medicine and keeping our homes healthy. Can you tell people a bit more about your book?
Sure. So Healthy Home, Healthy Family was really designed to help me not write reports. When I was doing assessment of people's homes, they wanted a lot more detail, and I was just sick of writing reports. I wrote the book. Just read the book. I'll give you the book as part of the assessment. But it's really a compilation of a lot of the research I've done over the last 20 years or so. in a palatable form, but also enough research to help the partner who's skeptical going, this is ridiculous. Why are you, you know, there's so much evidence out there. And I was shocked by the amount of evidence on electromagnetic fields and chemicals and mold and all that sort of stuff. So it's a, as you said, it's a reference guide. So you can just get to it when you're going, okay, I want to get, you know, I've got a kid with eczema. How do I deal with that with, you know, cleaning products or fabric softeners, all that sort of stuff. To help them navigate that. So a lot of data there. A lot on my website too, buildingbiology.com.au. I'm, as I mentioned, creating short courses for the public to help them navigate a lot of the misinformation, because once you bring the awareness of EMFs, now everyone starts buying shungite crystals and shielding materials that are actually often not doing anything and giving a false sense of security. And secondly, often exacerbating various fields, electric fields, magnetic fields, radio frequency fields. So they're often making it worse. So really wanting to empower the public. A lot of my time up until now has been spent on running the college, creating the only nationally accredited course in EMF testing. So we have that as an option for people who want careers in mold testing, EMF testing, building biology. But I think there's a demand to help clients, you know, with these short courses to help them navigate how to reduce their kids' exposure. Because in the end, what can be more important than the health of your family?
Yes, I totally agree, which is what we're all about here at Natural Super Kids. And I will say again, I know I said this in our previous episode, that your book and your website are just amazing sources of, you know, of information for me as a practitioner, but also I think, you know, really easy to consume for parents as well. So we'll make sure all of the links of where to find you and your website and everything that you do are in the show notes. So thank you so much for joining me again.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, Jess.
Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. Head on over to our website, naturalsuperkids.com, for the show notes for this episode, as well as a whole heap of inspiration to help you raise healthy and happy kids. I'll see you next week.